There we go. Okay, we can officially start now. I'd like to welcome everybody to the June LHUM Live conference call. As I've already said, my name is Maria Johnson, and I am this month's host. We also have, I know on the line, is Andy Marks, who is also one of the hosts of the call. Andy?
Hey, everybody.
There's Andy. And I don't know if Jessica has made it on the line, Jessica Loomer. She is also one of the co-hosts, and you'll find that we rotate months, and so each of us, you know, kind of takes our turn along the way. So, Jessica, are you there? No. Okay. She'll probably pop on later. Anyway, so those are your three hosts. You'll see our names come across the LHUM Live, you know, posts and things like that. So that's who we are. This call got started a couple of years ago when Jessica and Andy and I met at the second conference, and the idea kind of came about and how could we get the community together in a different way, not via social media or email, things like that. And the idea of this conference call came up, and we made it happen, and it's been a really big success ever since. People love it. And it's something for us all to look forward to at least once a month where we can all be on the same line and we can all have good discussion and share stories and listen to guest speakers. Again, the call is not just for affected, but it's for carriers. It's for loved ones and friends who are supporters of people who they know who have LHUM. So the other things I need to say before we get started with our guest speaker is that we don't talk about clinical trials on this call, nor do we give or, you know, endorse any medical or supplement information. We leave that to the scientists and the doctors, and we leave that off of this call. So if anyone starts asking that, I will politely let you know we're not going to discuss it. So, you know, try and remember not to bring that up. I know those are things of interest, and there's other ways to find that stuff out. So tonight we have a friend of mine now. We've been in touch with each other for a couple months now, and if you might have noticed, we just did a podcast together, and it was launched today, and I think it turned out pretty good. So anyway, my guest speaker is Derek Daniel, and he is a podcaster, a YouTuber, and a blogger, and you can find all of his good stuff on lifeaftersightloss.com. And Derek has been affected for 16 years and lives in Indiana. And I'm going to turn it over to Derek, and he can kind of give us where it all began for him and where he is now. So before we do that, I'm going to mute the call. And Derek, you're going to do *7 after I mute so that we can have a quiet, you know, a space of time here while Derek speaks. So let me get that done. Let's see. Okay.
The conference has been muted.
Okay. So, Derek, I need you to *7, so then it will just be you and I having conversation. And when it's time to open this up for questions or if you have comments, we will do that, and I will unmute the call. So, Derek, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes. It's always good when that works out.
That's right.
Anyway, like I said, Derek, if you heard my intro, you have come, you know, onto the scene, you know, with, you know, big and bold, and you have been all over the groups, and you have put out some such great stuff. And as I mentioned, you and I just finished a podcast that was launched today, and, you know, I thought it turned out just super, and I hope the folks listen to it. But, Derek, why don't you kind of start when, you know, back 16 years, you know, when you started to notice some change in your vision and kind of what was taking place at that time?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on the call tonight. I'm excited to be here and talk about this because, as I'll share in my story, this is one of the first times I'm really connecting with a lot of LHON people, so I'll get more into that here in just a minute. But if we travel back in time through the DeLorean, if you will, it was 2001, and I just graduated from high school. I was 18 years old and doing all the stuff that you do when you're 18. And, you know, I had a girlfriend. I was getting ready to go to college. It was a great time. And round about in June, round about this time of year, I started noticing that my left eye had this kind of spot in the middle. This is probably going to be familiar for many of us. But I remember driving home with my girlfriend, and I was driving. I reached up to cover my right eye to, like, wipe it or something. And I just noticed this spot out in the middle. And I was like, that's weird. And I opened up my right eye, and I was like, oh, huh, that's odd. So I'm like an eternal optimist. I'm like, it's fine. Everything's fine and great. No worries. So I left it alone for a couple of weeks, and I finally told my mom, who flipped out. She was like, what do you mean? So anyway, so she sent me to an optometrist who said, okay, you know, and I read the chart with my right eye pretty well, and then I tried it with my left eye, and I was like, I can't see the chart. He's like, well, that's not good. So I then went to an ophthalmologist and began the whole journey, as many of us do, where I was diagnosed or tried to be diagnosed with about 1,000 different things, you know, brain tumor, MS, optic, a bunch of stuff. And luckily, he kind of had an idea of what it was. He said, I think I know what it is, but I've never seen a case, so I can't be sure, and I need to send you somewhere else. I was like, okay. So I ended up going up to Indianapolis, where I now live, as a matter of fact. And I saw this old doctor. Dr. Yi was his name. And he was an older doctor. He'd probably been a doctor for about, I don't know, 30 years at that point. And he had a few questions and such, and he goes, I think this is it. And I was like, okay. So he said, it's called Leber's hereditary optic neuropathy, which probably for many of you, I sort of glazed over, and I was like, what do those words even mean? You might have just well said, you know, gibberish. And so he told me kind of what it was, and I think it was good just to have a diagnosis, but at the time, you know, we just didn't have a clue. And he told us a little bit. He did the blood test. I believe I have a mutation 11778. I don't remember 100%, but he did say it was the most common one, which I think 11778 mm-hmm. is. So yeah. He told me that, and I was like, okay, you know, whoop-de-doo. And I actually got diagnosed on my mom's birthday, so that was a happy birthday.
yeah.
And I was just talking. Actually, I was talking to Corey, who's on the line tonight. I was talking to him the other day, and we were talking about how, you know, when did I sort of lose my sight? How long did it take? For me, it took right at or a little less than 2 months, and I have the vision I have now in about those 2 months. I know some people a little more or less or whatever, but I lost it in about the 2 months. And at the time, I was working at a local theme park in my area doing entertainment, and I can remember going back with gusto and like, I can do this. And of course I knew the stage really well. So I was able to do it. And from then I didn't go to college that first semester. I went and did orientation and mobility training. I went and got a guide dog. I did a lot of stuff in the first like 4 months. I was like, let's do it all right now. I'm very much like, you know, going with gusto, let's do it all. And so yeah. I got the guide dog, and then I started school in the spring in January. And that was difficult because all my friends had already gone. You know, they had already experienced all their firsts and already done all the things. And I was living alone in a dorm room with my dog. And dogs don't make for good conversation. They're great for loyalty and friendship, but the conversation piece is kind of one-sided. So, you know, it was kind of depressing and sad. And I think that's when I started really hitting some of the depression. excuse me. And then after that, my girlfriend and I actually got engaged. That girlfriend I was riding home with in the car, she's actually my wife now of almost 14 years, two kids, and 14 years later. So we're doing good. and I'll talk about her a little more later. She's fantastic. So she's the like stability and substance of our relationship for sure. So, but anyway, we ended up transferring colleges, and I went to a different college then from then on out. And so my life really, it really was an interesting time because I didn't know anybody else that was blind. I grew up for 18 years, sighted, 20/20 vision. I had some glasses, but I think they were more for like a fashion statement. And so I was, you know, I was sighted. And then all of a sudden I was not. And here's the interesting part. I am adopted, and so this is a genetic disease, which, how many times have I heard the joke, but we didn't even see coming, and so we didn't understand it. I did finally meet my birth family back in 2007. Years after I lost my sight, and they didn't have a clue. They didn't know anything about it. They didn't know what it was. They did have like a far off distant uncle who had gone blind, but nobody knew why, because this was, decades ago. And it was so sporadic, of course. I have two half siblings in that family, and, I have a brother and a sister, and the brother is not visually impaired at all. And of course the sister has children. So what we know now, she's a carrier, he's a carrier, the kids are carriers and things like that. But at the time, we didn't know anything. And the interesting part was that after I met them, and got into things, I really didn't meet a ton of blind people. And it's not because I was like, ooh, blind people. I think at first you don't identify yourself as a blind person. So then you're like, no, I don't need to hang out with blind people. That'd be weird. But then, you start meeting blind people and you're like, oh, I can remember when I went to get my guide dog and this was only, 6 months in or whatever. It was very weird being around blind people. Like, I didn't have any interaction with any blind people hardly ever. I was from a very small town of about 6 people. And so the idea of meeting blind people was such a weird thing to me. I can remember walking into one lady's room because we were, just hanging out or whatever. And I walked in and her lights were off. And I said, oh, do you want me to turn the lights on? And she kind of smirked because she knew I was newly blind. She's like, what for? And I said, I don't know. And she had ended up losing her sight to a tumor. She had lost her sight like overnight and she woke up and couldn't see. And so, just the dynamic of that and then meeting different people with some vision, with usable vision, without, and some had better vision than me, some had worse vision than me, and just the dynamics of the people. One such lady I'll never forget, this isn't crucial to my story, but I always tell people, for some reason I think it's funny, she had no eyes, she had prosthetic eyes. And when she came to the guide dog facility, you come there for like 3.5 weeks, she had forgotten her prosthetic eyes. And I'm like, I feel like that's something you would remember. Like, that's on the list. I don't know why, but, again, that has nothing to do with LHON, but I always found that interesting. There's such dynamics in blind.
That was some of your intro to blind folks, and, all the way from prosthetic eyes to I don't need the lights on, But yeah, I agree with you. I would think that would be part of I need my clothes and I need my eyes. I agree.
Yeah. Your medication. The eyes, it's on the list, I think. But anyway, yeah, and it was such an interesting thing because I can remember walking down the hallway while they were giving us a tour, and one lady grabbed my arm and walked with me because I could see a little more than she could. And I was like, is that cheesy blind leading the blind joke, I think we all thought. And I was like, what am I doing? And so it's kind of, again, I was still in that phase of identifying somewhat sighted, somewhat visually impaired, and trying to be sighted and it was difficult. Now, I loved that experience with the guide dog, and I just recorded a podcast that's going to come out in a couple of weeks talking about guide dogs. And so I loved it. I think it was great. But anyway, I digress. So, moving on, we ended up getting married. Like I said, we got married when we were 20, which we don't advise people to do, but we're doing okay. And so we got married. We lived in a small apartment. We lived in a small house. We lived, we did the first few years married. And my wife was going to nursing school, and I don't know how she ever graduated. We lived in such a tiny place. How could she ignore me? So anyway, we were going through all these things and learning. Because remember, I lost my sight when I was 18. We were married at 20. So the first couple of years of marriage, it was still only 3 or 4 years into blindness. So it was still very new, and we were learning new things and trying to get around. And when we first got married, we lived in a place far out from the city. So getting around was difficult. It was very trapped. I can remember she was going to clinicals, and she'd get up at like 5 o'clock in the morning to go to clinicals. Well, I would stay up all night, be up with her and then go to bed during the day. And so it was kind of that, again, that depression kind of mode. Then eventually we got pregnant with our first child. We bought our first house. We did a lot of things. We got pregnant, bought a first house. We moved to a different place. We do a lot of things. I don't know what we do. It's just like, let's do this. Okay, let's do it. And so we had our first kid. I started a new position. I was in full-time ministry for about 11 years, over a decade. And that's when I started that back in 2004, 4. Actually, a church wanted me to come start a drama team at their church, and the drama team fizzled out, but I did stay at the church and ended up working in ministry. So we were doing that. We ended up having another child, and then we moved to Indianapolis. I took a position at a church up here, and then I resigned in 2015 from full-time ministry. So over the years, blindness has always been sort of in the background, but never really something that I engaged with a whole lot. And as I said, this is one of the first times really interacting with a lot of LHON people, because until I found this group, and this, I hand on a Bible, truth, I had never met a single person that had Leber's hereditary optic neuropathy. Nobody. And then what happened was, and Maria and I were talking about this, I told her the first time we talked, I have a friend on YouTube named Sam who has a YouTube channel called The Blind Spot, and he has something called Stargardt's, which is a juvenile form of macular degeneration, or MACD, as I like to call it. And so he was telling me that he's part of this Stargardt's group on Facebook, and I was like, there's a Stargardt's group? That's neat. So in my mind, I was just like, you know, if there's a Stargardt's group, there might be a Leber's group. I don't know. Okay, I'll just look that up. And I started typing in Leber's, and it filled out the whole thing of, you know, this group. And I was like, holy moly. Yeah, and so I clicked into it, and it's like, there are like 3,000 people in this group. I'm like, are you serious? And so it's kind of like when you buy a new car, and then you see that car everywhere, but you had never seen the car before. I mean, Leber's is coming out of the woodwork. So all these people in this group, and then I've seen story after story. In fact, there's a young man not too far from me who's a freshman in high school running, and he has Leber's. And I'm like, seriously? Like, I never met another person with Leber's all these nearly 16 years later, and I'm meeting everybody. And so it's just been an amazing experience. And, you know, just to talk for a second about kind of what I'm doing, and we can get more into it later if you want, but, you know, I'm doing videos and the podcast and the blog. I have the website, and my whole focus at this point is to help people who are going through the transition from sighted to visually impaired, like so many of us are or have through. Obviously, people who have – I've got, you know, people that have watched the videos and listened to the podcast that have been blind since birth, but my main focus is kind of like us, this sighted to blind transition, because that's what I know, that's what I understand. So my life, like I said, I got diagnosed August 2nd, which is my mom's birthday, so it'll be almost 16 years this year, and it's been such an interesting journey because, like I said, blindness has always been in the background of my life. It's never really kind of taken this forefront, if you will, and it's not because I've been ashamed or tried to hide it. Probably at first I did. You know, I can say we probably all had that moment where we're just like, no, I'm not blind. And somebody would tell me I didn't look blind. I thought it was a huge compliment because I don't want to look blind or whatever. But now it's like, yeah, I'm visually impaired. This is part of my life. But it's never taken over. This is as forefront as it has gotten for me because, and without going into too much counseling, you know, blindness just hasn't defined me. It's just not my definition. There's so many other things. I'm an actor, a singer. I preached for many years. I was going to go to college for vocal performance. And then after I lost my sight, I figured sight reading would be a little more difficult. So, although I did join a choir later on in college, and the person who stood next to me, I just listened to them and learned the part. And that was really, interesting. I remember the choir director being like, okay, you sound fine, but how are you going to learn this music? And I said, I don't know. Put me in there. We'll see what happens. He's like, all right. Yeah. I think one thing that I have figured out in my life, again, not having met a ton of blind people, I have just become my own advocate over the years. That example is so true. Like, how are you going to do this? I don't know. Let's figure it out. And we just find a way to do it. You know, whether it was technology, because when I lost my sight in 2001, technology was abysmal. And I'm sure that 30 years ago it was even worse. So, you know, nowadays it's like, oh my gosh, if you come in my house, you wouldn't even know because I use my iPhone and my Mac and, you know, whatever else. And so it's just been amazing over the years how much things have changed and how different it's become. So whatever I was trying to do, whether it was technology, college, choir, acting, I remember I did a show one time and the stage was very dark. And so my friend who was the technician, who was my college roommate there for a while, he said, okay, you know, let's do the glow tape. And for those of you who aren't sure, glow tape basically is this tape you put on the stage floor and it literally glows. So when the lights go out, you from the being on stage have the perspective of seeing where the tape is. Usually the audience is lower so they can't see it. So he said, okay, let's put it where it is. So we put it on level changes and where the curtain was and things like that. And one girl said, can we get some more glow tape on the stage? And I was like, look, I put this glow tape down, and if I don't need more glow tape, you don't need more glow tape. And she was like, yeah. We all have the privilege of being blind. So I was like, yeah, you're right, you don't. So, one of the things where they had never had a blind actor in a show, and so I was setting sort of a, not that there's never been a blind actor in a show, I mean, there's tons of people, but in that situation, there hadn't been. And so we just figured it out. And it really wasn't a thing. You know, I can remember the PR person saying, how much do you want me to talk about your blindness in the PR stuff? I said, none. And she's like, really? I was like, no, because I don't want blindness to be the focus. I want the acting to be the focus. And so, again, I think people say, oh, you're trying to hide it? I'm like, no, I'm not trying to hide it. But I know immediately I'll get the, you were good for a blind guy. And, you know, oh, great. So I'm terrible if I was sighted. Is that what you're saying? But
You want it to be known as an actor, not a blind actor.
Absolutely. Right. I want it to be just Derek. You know, just Derek is an actor. Yeah. Derek's a singer. Derek's a whatever. And Derek happens to be visually impaired. And there's nothing wrong with that. I just don't want that to be the first thing people read on my bio. You know what I mean? So nowadays, now I'm sort of really focusing on the sight loss, you know, talking with people and doing the content creation, it's been a lot of fun because though I'm not defined by my vision impairment, it's a great opportunity to connect with people, to walk them through things that I've been through, to ask and answer questions, to just listen and, you know, engage with people. And that's really what I love doing. All the time I was in ministry, I was really a pastoral counselor. And so I just had the opportunity to speak and to talk to people and connect with them on a deep level. And that's really what I hope to bring to this. So my journey as a visually impaired person has been a very interesting one, challenging at times, like all of us, having to learn new things, being a husband, then being a father, you know, then moving and owning homes and all that sort of thing. It's just been such an interesting, wonderful, challenging, heartbreaking journey all at the same time. So I love the life I live. Somebody asked me if I would, you know, take a cure for blindness. Would I, you know, want to have my sight back? And I say, yeah, definitely. I would take it. Absolutely. But, you know, until such a time, until I wake up and a miracle comes along, whether it's medical or otherwise, I'm going to live my life to the fullest. And that just means I can't see quite as well as anybody else. So, and that's all right. So I'm excited to be on the call and talk to Maria. Maria and I could probably go all night. everybody else would hang up.
And we have, you know, taken, you know, many mornings and a few afternoons of many, many hours on this. But no, but all good conversation. And Derek, that was, you know, that was awesome. I mean, you really touched on a lot of things. But one thing, can you touch a little bit about being a dad and how have your kids, they've only known you as, you know, dad has, you know, vision that's not so good, but how have they adapted to maybe help, you know, you along the way? You've told me stories about, you know, your son bringing drawings to you, they bring their schoolwork to you, and, you know, how they might, you know, do things a little differently than a child of somebody who is sighted.
Yeah, definitely. So, like Maria said, my kids have only known me visually impaired at this point, and so it's just been very normal. And I can remember when my wife and I got married and we started talking about kids and stuff, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, things like diapers, baby food, you know, all those sort of things. It was like, you know, because at the time my wife worked nights and she'd work 12-hour shifts. So she'd have to go in and she'd leave the house at like 5:30 and she wouldn't get back until like 8 or whatever in the morning. So it was all me all night. And we just had to figure that out. And that was the thing, I think, the big part of this is I was a dad first. I wasn't a blind person first. I was a dad first. And, yeah, I had to figure some things out, like with, you know, giving the bottle and the changing the diaper and all that sort of thing. But we just figured it out. It was like, we got to do this. How are we going to do it? And my wife will not let me use blind as an excuse. It really stinks because I could get away with so much other things. But she's like, nope, sorry. You've got to be a dad. And so my kids have gotten older, as Maria said. They've really adapted and adjusted. They just do things now without thinking about it. So if my now, like, for example, with spelling words, I will take a picture on my iPhone and zoom in and give them their spelling words. So now my kids just come to me. You know, my daughter will come who's my daughter just graduated the – I say graduated, it's cheesy – graduated the first grade, and my son graduated the fifth grade. And so now she'll – like, they'll come to me and be like, here, take a picture – You know, like they just automatically do it. Or if they have a project, or let's say they drew something or colored something, they'll bring it over and immediately start describing it. Like, oh, look what I did, Daddy. I'm like, oh, this is great. Tell me about it. Oh, well, so I colored this part blue and I did this thing here. And actually what it does is it creates natural conversation. Like, why did you color that blue? Oh, well, because this reason. And it lets me into their brain and they didn't even realize it. So it's actually a pretty decent advantage. You know, and then if they have a story they want to tell me, you know, my son will start the story and he gives me details that are visual that, you know, because he's telling me the story. I'm not really there, but he's going to give me visual details. So it'll look like this or whatever. So they have, I don't know. And my daughter, she's great. She's like a lot like me. She's very loud. She'll tell you anything she's thinking, whether it's good or bad. And she's so fantastic. We'll be walking along and she'll look back and say, Daddy, there's a step. And she can be in mid-conversation with, you know, my wife and be like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. Daddy, there's a step. Anyway, blah, 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 and just move on with it. I'm like, thank you. Yeah. And, you know, they're just such great they're growing to be compassionate people. And that's what's amazing. You know, my son, he said the other day that some kid was making fun of blind people or doing something where his eyes were closed. And he's like, oh, I was blind. He's like, my son said, you know who's blind? And I'm like, who? He's like, my dad. And the kid was like, I don't know what to say.
Oh, no. Fifth grade, he's already used the blind card.
Absolutely. We've got the card, and we will play it. So
great. Play it. I got a deck. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Yeah.
That's right. So my kids are fantastic.
Oh, well, you know what? You know, I love how you described how they just automatically go into conversations with you, and it's just natural for them. And my daughter just said to me in the car yesterday, we were talking about how we've been shopping through the years of dresses and proms and homecomings, and she goes, I've gotten really good at describing stuff. Like, she was super proud of that. And I go, well, yeah, you have. You really have. My kids have, because they've had to and they want to. Because our children, if you're an affected parent, your children, they want you to know what it looks like, and they'll do their very best. Of course, age, you know, as they get older, even more detail, they want you to know what's going on what they bring home. My daughter was in ceramics this year, Derek, so, you know, from art projects to ceramics, and she goes, okay, I put blue glass in here, and then over here, this is a turtle. And ceramics being very tactile, I'm like feeling the whole thing. I'm like, oh, what's that? What's that? And she describes it, you know. So, you know, it's not because we force them to do it. They want to do that for us. And as, you know, we talk to our kids, say step, you know, they just say it. They just say it. And it's not because we are using them as guide dogs. They are not our chains. They are not our slaves. They are not our slaves. So they are just learning empathy and compassion and kindness, and they will be incredibly helpful to folks with or without disabilities, I believe, in their later years. And Derek, I know you feel the same way.
Yeah, there's a kid on the bus that they ride whose mother is deaf. And so they have seen, like, when they get on and off the bus, they'll see the child signing to the mother and that sort of thing. And so I'll say, you know, oh, really? What do you think about that? I'm like, oh, it's kind of different having, you know, like a deaf mom. I'm like, well, you have a blind dad, so it's kind of, you know, it's obviously a different disability, but similar. How do you think they do things? And so we're able to have a conversation. And then it just sort of makes sense. Like, oh, yeah, well, they probably are pretty normal then. We're normal. Well, as normal as we possibly can be, I guess. But, oh, interesting. Okay. And then they move on. And so they just get used to the environment that they're in. And, you know, when we started watching movies at home with audio description, they at first were like, ugh, this is horrible. Why is it talking? But now it's like, it's just part of the thing. So, yeah, my kids are learning to be compassionate, understanding. And just let things slide, because it's like, oh, well, this isn't that big a deal, you know, so.
Yeah. And that's their normal, you know, that's just their normal. And it will, it always will be. But, you know, if they, you know, see a blind person later in life, you know, like, I was like you, Garrett, I never met a blind person before I went blind, you know, and then, you know, except, you know, then I knew me, of course, there was one, but it was, you know, but neither are my kids, nothing. But when they do, you know, run into a blind person later, they're going to know how to interact with them. There's a young man we had on the call. He lives like 2 miles from me. He has LHON. He's a junior at my daughter's school. And when he transferred schools and went there, she was the one that helped him around campus. He has better vision than I do, but she helped him around. But she knew what he kind of needed, what he didn't need. She knew how to explain to the teachers, you know, he has the same thing my mom has. That's kind of what she said. He has the same thing my mom has. And, you know, they all went, oh, okay. So, you know, but again, you know, she went ahead and took it upon herself to say, I'll help him. And, you know, I mean, she's 16, 17 years old. Like, you know, teenagers just don't do that. But she knew, I know what to do, you know, more than probably any other kid that's in the school. So, again, you know, just an example of how they will act later, or you hope they will act later. But, Derek, I love, you know, again, you and I, we could take over the call, I know, but we've got a lot of callers on, and we want to give everyone a chance to ask questions or make comments. And it could be about what Derek said. It could be about something that he said that spurred a story or a comment or a question in your mind about something else. And we want to give you that opportunity now to go ahead and do that. But what I'm going to ask, we're going to start this way. If you want to ask Derek a question or have a comment, press *7 on your phone, and it will unmute your phone line, and then you will be able to talk. So we're going to start there first because I kind of like the quiet. And it's nice because you can hear everybody. And so anyway, if you have a question or comment, please feel free to ask Derek anything. And, you know, he has said to me, I'm an open book. He doesn't mean anything. So,
that's right.
You know, I'm just letting him know. So, anyway, does anyone have anything they'd like to start off with tonight?
Kathy.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Corey found out his diagnosis. We prayed that it wouldn't be on my birthday or his father's birthday. Mine's the 26th of February. His dad's is the 27th. And he found out on his dad's birthday. So it was something similar.
Yeah.
And he found out he was home alone, which was kind of like one of my biggest fears. And it happened to be one of our birthdays. So Corey has that in common.
Yeah, it's interesting. I can remember, actually, so I got diagnosed. It was myself and my parents were in the doctor's office when he told me about it. And he told me he was 99% sure, but he had to do a blood test, you know, to figure it out for sure. But then we got that day, and like 2 days later, we had a family friend who's like a grandmother to me. She had a stroke, and then she died a week later. And so it was like boom, boom, boom. They say bad things come in three. So we were just waiting for the third one, I guess. But it was just like, oh. But I tell you what, just to give you a little bit of hope, nobody remembers that now. Like, nobody, my mom doesn't call me weeping on her birthday saying, oh, this was the day, or what, you know what I mean? Like, we'll occasionally bring it up, but we just, it's her birthday now, and hardly ever do I bring up the fact that that was the diagnosis day. I just share that with you guys because I think that's important. So years later, it's just mom's birthday now, so it's, it always, it's her birthday first. She's a few years older than I am. So it's her birthday first.
And that's true. And I think a lot of the people who are affected, we remember the date, but nobody else really does, you know, but we just remember all those, you know, diagnosis dates, the last time you drove a car. There's a lot of dates that we carry around in our head that, you know, we're not advertised, but you know what? It's part of that time of our life. And, you know, that was a big deal. A lot of those dates are big deals. So.
And I think it's important to remember, it's kind of like comparing it to when you have a loved one pass away. So the day they pass away is like, can be this very difficult day, and you can come back to it every year. But one thing that I always found encouraging was like, they died one day. They lived a whole bunch of other days, though. And so I got diagnosed one day, but I've lived a bunch of other days that were really cool. So I choose, you know, I'm going to focus on all these other days. And that might sound cheesy, but we tend not to focus on that one day. We focus on all these other great days.
Right, right. Anyone else unmuted and wants to talk about anything?
Am I muted or unmuted?
You're unmuted. You did it. You're unmuted. It's Kathleen.
Okay, I have a question actually for both of you. I guess kind of if you have, like, well, because you guys have kids and so do I, and, yeah, my kids love to help. That's what, like, while I was listening, I was thinking, like, because I live in South Georgia, we have big roaches. I can't see them. And you, like, put, like, spots on the ground, and I'm like, I always yell for my son. And I'm like, Anthony, like, what is that? Like, and, you know, you could just be like, it's paper. But, you know, it's whatever it is. And, dude, I know they don't do it on purpose, but I don't know if it's ever happened for you guys. Like, they come sometimes slip and say things. They hurt my feelings, but I don't want them to know. It's like, oh, I wish mom could still do that, you know, because they remember when I could see, you know. And so, like, the water slide that I took my oldest down, you know, like, in Montana, he was like, we're on a vacation, he was like, oh, I wish mom was going this time because, you know, she could take me. And it's like, but, oh, she can't see. And it's like, they're sad about it. But it bothers me, but I don't let them know it bothers me. They do a lot of helping. They do help me with steps and stuff. But, you know, like, my youngest told me one day, like, in the past, like, he was like, oh, well, you know, I don't like being here much because, like, at his daddy's, you know, he's like, it's more fun because I can't help him play video games. Like, how am I supposed to play a video game? You know, like, he likes Call of Duty. I can't do that, you know, like, so It's like, sad, but I try to find other ways to, like, participate in stuff they like to do, you know?
Yeah. Garrett, do you want to have anything to give it to you?
Yeah, and you can go too, Maria, but I would say a couple of things as I think about it. First of all, can I ask how old your kids are?
Oh, well, soon to be 13 and 8.
13 and 8, okay. So first of all, they're really self-absorbed anyway. So, like, they're like, oh, my life is awful because it's all about them at this point. But I would actually engage, and I'm trying really hard not to counsel, so just cut me off, Maria. I would try to hard to engage them if they say, hey, this stinks, you can't see. Because the truth is, it does stink, like, and they're sad about it. So if you get the chance, and you can't do it all the time, but if you get the chance, I would say, really, what makes you sad about that? And then age appropriately, as you feel it's okay, be like, you know, I'm sad about it too. Because my son asked me the other day, and he's 11, he said, Daddy, do you wish you could see? And I said, well, at times, yeah, it would be very helpful, and we talked about it. And so you can tell wheels are turning in his mind, you know, like, I wonder why. And he said, too, like, I wish you could see so you could take me places. And he's just expressing a genuine, honest thing. And you know, it's just like, hey, thank you for sharing that, because now I know you more and more, and that's a good opportunity. And, again, they're kids. And Maria has older kids, so maybe she can attest more to this. But as they get older, I would imagine those kinds of things, like Daddy's house is more fun, are going to start to dissipate, and they're going to start to realize, wow, fun's not that big a deal. So just as an encouragement to let you know that when they say those things, it's coming from a place of, obviously, they're kids and they're somewhat self-absorbed, but at the same time, they're expressing a real genuine kind of heart's cry. So if you get the chance, I would do your best to sort of engage them.
Yeah, that's fantastic. How am I supposed to top that, Derek? Thanks. Well, I had a situation with my daughter. She was 14 when I was affected, and she just, when they were freshmen, she's a senior now, so we're now 4 years later, 3.5 years later. They wrote a letter to their senior self. So the seniors all just got these letters that they wrote their freshman year. Now, I was affected like the week she started high school, so yeah, that was a good time. So she read the letter, and it said, dear senior self, or whatever it was, but goes on like, yeah, things are okay. My brother's fine. Mom's okay, but I'm just so over it. And that's all she said about me or anything else. 14, starting high school, mom just goes blind, but I'm over it. Well, she wasn't over it. I'll tell you that. She was so not over it. And she also, you know, and we've gone through a lot of emotional stuff, you know, since then. But, you know, she even said to a friend of mine, who's a teacher at the school, my mom's never going to be able to see my prom dress. She's not going to be able to see anything that I wear. she's not going to be able to shop with me, you know, blah, 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 you know, all about her, right? And that was just freshman year. Well, I have to tell you, I have been shopping with her ever since. She just went to prom. She looks gorgeous. You know, I, you know, we went shopping. We did all those things, and her and I had the conversation just yesterday. I go, what a difference. What a difference. But my daughter has matured as well. So she now can handle it a little differently, too. And it's not all about her. It's about including me into the activities that, you know, mother-daughters do, or even what a mother-son, you know, all that stuff. She's working, how can I be included instead of, she's not going to be able to do all this stuff. Now it's, well, how can I include mom? So that's been a big change as far as, you know, growing, you know, the kids getting older and teenagers, you know, which, what advice I can give. But, you know, soon they will figure out how can we include mom, because it'll just mature, you know, that way. So anyway, how about that? So anybody else? Anyone else got any questions? Or comments, or, and it could be any topic, you know, anything. I think I'm going to go ahead and unmute everybody, because sometimes people might have a, you know, a little trouble unmuting, and I don't want anyone to be held back by it. So give me 2 seconds.
The conference has been unmuted.
Okay. Everybody is unmuted. And people know I will speak up if it gets to be too loud. Y'all need to make sure you are in a quiet room, that you don't have, you know, somebody in the background yelling at you for dinner, or snoring. We've had it all happen. So we try and keep our background as quiet as possible, please. So now that you're all muted, please, it's a free for all. Anyone who would love to speak up about anything, please do.
Before we get into questions, I will say, because everyone was just unmuted, if you're going to have some noise where you are, you can, again, press *6 or your mute button and go back to mute, just so you know.
Thank you. Yeah, good point. Thank you, Andy.
I'm coming now.
Okay, I'll speak up. It's Lisa from Canada. I think I always
somebody
speak, but that's okay.
Thing.
First off, I want to say very inspiring. Your life is very similar to mine, Derek, in a lot of ways. My children were 2.5, and my stepson was 12 at the time. So basically, my youngest really doesn't know his mom any different than the way I am today. And it's kind of funny because, you know, we'll be somewhere, and like you said, your daughter or your son, I think it was, that they'll say, oh, Dad, there's a step. Well, same way with me. Oh, Mom, there's a step. You know, just, but it's part of their language now.
Mm-hmm.
So I also want to say that I listened to your podcast today, and both you and Maria were excellent.
Thank you.
I normally don't listen to podcasts. I will listen to Maria's, of course, that one, but I normally don't, because sometimes I find them quite boring. But I found it very intriguing and hit home in a lot of places, because you guys were real. You're being honest that, yes, at times it is very difficult. And, yes, not being able to see your daughter in her prom dress, really see it, is difficult. But the main point, I guess, is that we're all still there, and we're able to show our kids and our friends and family that it doesn't matter. You know, we can still go on somehow, some way, to try and make it better for everybody. I have to share a little bit of a story for you guys that just happened to me recently, if that's okay.
Sure.
My son, my 16-year-old now, we were driving somewhere, and he says, oh, that's really strange. So, of course, I don't know what he's talking about because I can't see where he's pointing. He says, that person's walking by themselves. So I say, okay, so why is that strange? Well, because they're blind. They have a cane. Why would they be walking by themselves? Again, this is my 16-year-old, right? They're supposed to know things. And I said, well, the cane helps to guide them. And so I went to explain that. I said, well, why wouldn't he? Well, that's really strange. I said, well, Cole, that's my son's name, I walk out by myself. Yeah, but, Mom, you can see. So, again, it's how the kids our race, right? Maria's kids were a little bit older, mm-hmm. so they were kind of thrown into the picture. My son looks at it as if his mom can see. It's not an obstacle or a barrier for him. And when he does tell friends of his that my mom can't see, they all kind of look at him like, yeah, right. You know, they don't believe it. So, like Kathleen, you said sometimes your kids, you know, say things that are hurtful.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't think they really intentionally mean it. They're too young at that age. And even as they get older, I don't think they mean it to hurt. It's just part of their language. It comes out. And sometimes as they get older, they'll realize, oh, wait a minute, that probably was taken the wrong way. So don't take it hurtful. They don't mean that. They're more than willing to help, and I think it's a very good experience for kids to help because, like Derek said, they become very compassionate kids, which I can honestly say my youngest son is truly a very compassionate and sympathetic young man. And that's all I'm going to say.
Thanks, Lisa. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing that. And it's so true. You know, my kids are becoming compassionate and caring people. There's a child in my daughter's class. I remember my daughter just finished the first grade, and this child has issues, and I don't know what it is or what the problem is, but basically she has issues with her digestive system, and you know, she has to be first grader wearing a diaper because of all these issues. And so my daughter invited her to come to her birthday party, and the when she came, she said, I want to thank you because Aubrey's been so kind, and she's, you know, she doesn't make fun of this little girl. Other kids make fun of her, and Aubrey doesn't. And I talked to Aubrey about it. Aubrey's my daughter's name, by the way. And I talked to Aubrey about it, and I said, so you're friends with so-and-so? And it's like, yeah. It's like, what do you think about her, you know, having these problems? She's like, well, it's different. I was like, yeah, it's different. She's like, mm. And, you know, and she's talked to me about it before, and we go through it. But it's just one of those things where they grow up, and they just, it's natural. And so I would agree, they when they say things, again, they're not trying to be hurtful, and I would rather my son and daughter express themselves, even if it comes out a little clunky with me, and say, hey, thanks for sharing that. You might want to be careful if you say that like that. With me, it's cool, I get it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's a teaching opportunity as well for them.
My daughter sometimes starts things off when she's going to say something like, Mom, tell us that. But I'm like, oh, okay. You know, it'll have something to do with like, but you can't see, you know, X, Y, Z. But it'll always be, Mom, no offense, but I'm like, oh, here it comes. Anyway, again, age has a big difference, you know, big difference on how they are through the years. So thank you, Lisa. That was very sweet, and I appreciate the compliment on the podcast that Derek and I did.
Yes.
I know there'll be more, Derek. But anyway.
More.
Anybody else have anything they'd like to say? We've got a little bit of time left. Please speak up.
This is Randy in Georgia.
Hi, Randy.
Hey, Randy.
Yeah, I've been enjoying this. I was diagnosed at Emory in Atlanta by a doctor named Dr. Nancy Newman.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever heard of her, but she's been on this website before. What I see is like I'm looking through a cloud.
Yeah,
I can actually, I can get around, but I can't read regular print, so I can't read my mail, and I can't, get a driver's license. So
how long
I'm sort
have
of,
you been affected, Randy?
I was diagnosed, I'm 57, and I was diagnosed in November of 2002.
Okay.
So do you use audio with your iPhone and stuff?
Yeah. I have my iPhone. I use VoiceOver, which is the built-in screen reader. And then for my computer, I zoom in on it. I have a Mac, and I use the built-in feature there. I have an Apple TV. I have a lot of Apple products. I'm just I'm an Apple fan. But yeah, I use all the.
Well, I just want you to know that I'm really glad to be able to get in touch with you. The librarians over there at the library that's about a block from where I live, they're so nice to me. They hooked me up with a talking books program, talking book topics from the NLS. And so I was really grateful about that. And
great.
I'm just, I don't really have the depression so much except just the alienation, you know, because nobody around here really has any idea about this. And I always get, why don't you bring your glasses? Yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
Randy, right. Randy, this
yes.
is, I've got a question for you. Do you use Facebook?
Do I use what?
Facebook.
No, I don't use a computer much. When I go to the library, I've got to where I can get sites. You know, I can't get the audio though. I have to get the librarian to help me because that arrow is too small, or the little triangle. It's too small for me to get that in, but I can get that deep blue thing that, and then you enter, you know, so I can get the website, but I can't get the audio.
Uh-huh.
So I have to get some help.
Okay, because I was going to say there's a gentleman who's, I don't think he's very far from you. He's in Maysville, Georgia, and he was affected at age 43 about 4 years ago. And I think Maysville's pretty close to where you said you are, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm about 30 miles north of Atlanta.
I know they'd be. I know he and his wife would be interested in connecting. If I know you registered with the website. If I send you an email, will you get the email?
Well, I don't really. I'm not really set up right now for it.
Okay.
But that's definitely something. Yeah, and Maysville. Do you know where that's at?
I mean, I'm looking on a map. I'm in California, so I only know it by looking on a map. It looks like it's only, like you said, a half an hour away from you. Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out how to get you guys connected if I can't do it through Facebook or through email. do you want to give me a phone number? And I could, would you mind
sure.
sharing?
Sure.
We're going to take the phone off the board. If it'll
yeah,
stay on,
yeah.
and we're, once later in the call, when Maria takes us off recording, let me ask you again, and when we're not on recording, you can share a phone number, and I'll get you guys connected offline. Does that sound good?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, great. So, Maria, keep on with the call, but I just wanted to bring that up.
Well, I appreciate that.
Sure. And
hey,
actually, Eric, one thing I want to mention, too, was one of the things that a lot of times comes up is people ask how can their loved ones help. And I think, Derek, you really raised a couple really good things that maybe loved ones don't know it, but you guys said it a lot, this notion of, like, describing things. You know, like if someone's affected and if a spouse were told, or not just kids, but anyone who's around you, a parent, a spouse, a loved one, this needing for description. I mean, it's obvious to you guys, but sometimes those of us who are excited don't know it, and just hear you talk about the description is really important. And that notion of, like, how can we include someone? You know, again, it's what everyone's through, but maybe if we sort of bring that up more often as when people say, how can I help? The answer can be, you can help me if you describe things more. You can help me if you think about how to include me in what you're doing. Just something to consider saying to loved ones who ask, how can I help?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's important to keep in mind that and so many times it's like, I don't know what to do, and giving them, you know, and I think some people say, well, it's not my responsibility to not, like, well, yeah, but you're the only one who knows how you see. And so you're the one who knows how much support you need. Most of the time I tell people, like, I'll ask if I need help. So it's a good time to say, here's a good way. And I think on the flip side of that, and I'm sort of switching the topic here a little bit, but I have some videos and some things on the website, because so often I found from my wife and other people that the what I call the sighted supporters, because I know we have a couple of moms on the call and things like that, the sighted supporter gets kind of overlooked, and it's like we concentrate on the visually impaired person, like, oh, you need help and you're terrible and your life's over. But the sighted supporter goes through so much as well. And I did a podcast a few weeks ago with my wife, and we talked about what the things she struggles with. I don't know, maybe a year ago, where I talked about three things that sighted supporters feel but they don't like to admit. And so all too often, and I know, you know, this is a lot of times about the visually impaired person, but all too often they get overlooked, and they have struggles that they're going through as well. So I just want to encourage you that if you're on this call and you're a carrier and you're a mom or a sister or a brother or whatever you are, family friend or whatever, you're going through stuff as well, and not the same way. And the key to remember is you don't understand the blind person, and the doesn't necessarily you. Okay. And so I just encourage everybody that's doing that. Not only are you there, the visually impaired person, but if you need help as well, you know, find that, keep the communication open between both of you, so that, you know, you're keeping it out in the open. Even if it's, I mean, many times it's like, you know, if my wife's like, this sucks. Yeah, it does. And but I know my wife loves me, and Maria and I have talked about it before, and I think we even said on the podcast today, being mad at LHON, you know, we're angry at the site loss, not at the person. That was a bit of a rant, I apologize, but you mentioned something about, you know, sighted supporters. So it's a two-way street for sure.
Derek, this is Pauline Wilcox calling from Fairport, New York. And a couple of things that you said really resonated with me, because as a mom and a carrier, my son's not little anymore. He just turned 27. But I was thinking, and maybe feeling even more alone because my husband just passed away. I was struggling when my son Bennett wanted to go to Massachusetts to Smith College for this gypsy jazz guitar camp, to put in simple terms. I was struggling because he wanted to take the bus there. And I said to him, well, you know, the only time you've been to Boston since you've lost your eyesight, you were meeting friends there, because he used to go to college at Northeastern. And so friends would meet him. But I said, you don't know anybody there. We don't know the area. And I kept thinking, you know, there's resources for people who are visually impaired, but what about the moms? And I didn't even have my husband to talk to about this, right? Like, I didn't want to keep him from doing something he really wanted to do, but I also wanted to be smart and think of his safety. So I'm fortunate because in Rochester, New York, there's an organization called ABVI, and I did meet with one of the social workers there and explain the situation, because I think there's a good feeling of satisfaction when you can do something on your own. And so she came up with, I think, a great resolution, and this is what we're doing. She said, how about in telling your son Bennett that it's not that you don't trust him or anything, it's all just about my discomfort, so would he be willing for me to drive him there and then find out where the bus station is and all that, get him set up so that he spends the week there, but he takes the bus back home. So that seems like a great kind of compromise. It still gives him this experience of doing it on his own, but, you know, kind of giving me a little bit of, it sounds like I'm a control person, right, but a little bit of comfort in that, even though, like I said, he's not a little, I mean, he just turned 27, so he's an adult, but I just needed to feel okay with that.
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, let me just say my condolences on your loss. And secondly, my mom would drive me everywhere if I let her. I'm 34 years old, and she would come pick me up. She would want to be with me everywhere. I can remember when I first lost my sight and I was doing shows at the park. She could barely come to the show because she was so nervous. And so even to this day, it's a mom thing. Your son could be sighted, blind, have two limbs. It doesn't matter. You're a mom. And so, you know, give yourself a break. I don't think you're controlling at all. And so I would say that that is a great resolution. And two, like you said, you're going through some of this stuff, not to mention, you know, experienced and, you know, with your son's vision and all these other sort of things. So it makes perfect sense. So I'm glad. I don't know if I can say that I don't know you at all, but I'm very proud of you that you decided to, you know, find a way to do it instead of being like, nope, we can't, but your way to make it work for everyone, you know, so you can find success for your son and help for you as well. Kudos to you, and I'm glad you found somebody to get out.
Good. Thank you. Thanks.
Hey, Derek.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Corey.
What's up, my man, Corey?
Hey. Hey, it's good to hear from you again. First of all, I watched the podcast you referred me to and about identity.
Yeah.
And it was very very insightful and thought-provoking, too, so I appreciate you telling me about
that.
Secondly, you said something that was very interesting about I know we've been talking about description a lot on the call, and I know on one of the Facebook posts you talked about the audio description at the movie theaters, but you also mentioned on the call when you watch movies with your children, you all watch it with audio description. I don't know, is that – I've noticed recently that with the Xfinity service, and I just started using this feature – It'll tell you which channel you're on, and as opposed to getting right next to the screen to see what station it is. So I've recently found that feature. But what do you use for audio description with movies? Is it the actual DVD, or does that come as a feature with Apple TV? Or?
That's a good question. Okay, so first of all, usually, and I think I've done videos and maybe even a podcast about this, but usually cable and satellite these aren't terrible at this. Xfinity, they have a good service where the guide is read to you, and it'll do a text-to-speech. So that's really good. I don't use Xfinity because it's really expensive in my area. And as a matter of fact, I don't use any cable service now. So what I do, to answer your question in 90 minutes, what I do is I use Apple TV, and because I'm an Apple fan and I'm trapped in the system of Apple. So I use Apple TV. So the first thing is they have their menu system is obviously going to be described with VoiceOver like it is on your phone. So it's very similar to how it works on your phone. And then it just depends on the service you're using. So Netflix has a lot of audio descripted things. As a matter of fact, if you go to categories, if I'm not mistaken, there's an audio description section. So you can go in and look at that section and all the ones that list TV movies that have audio description.
Oh, wow.
And so you can go in and check that feature out. Then, again, it just depends on what you're using in the station and so forth. I have something called PlayStation View. And that is, it's through the PlayStation, but you don't have to own a PlayStation to get it. I think it's just Sony's way of marketing themselves. And so that's an app TV, and it's a pretty good app. It'll read the guide to you. And then I do use Blu-rays and DVDs that have it as well, so for watching a movie. And then things like iTunes, a lot of their movies they're coming out with now will have AD on it. So just check and see. I did a video not too long ago about the Apple TV, where I found audio description. So if you ever do get one, and I highly recommend it, it's a little bit pricey, but gosh, it's really changed the way I watch TV. So there are quite a few different options to get it. And then on Xfinity, I don't know this for sure, but on Xfinity, I would imagine there is, when you watch a channel, a lot of times there's a different audio track. So I'm not sure how to find it on Xfinity, but when I had Dish, you would go into the menu and you go to audio. And what it would do is you could pick different languages, so like English, Spanish, French, whatever. And if that station offered that audio track, it would change it to that language. Well, now kind of like how you would do on a Blu-ray, you know, change it to English, Spanish, whatever the case is. And one of the tracks would do audio description. Depends on the station, and it depends on, you know, if they offer it or not. I know things like Disney Channel, TBS, they would offer it. So check into that as well. Contact Xfinity and be like, hey. Sometimes they call it SAP for, you know, that channel, and it just really depends. Yeah, there is a lot more now for audio description, and that's kind of how I use it.
Okay, thanks. I'll look
into it. Hey, Corey. It's Andy here. How are you?
Hey, what's up, Andy?
I'm doing well. I will kind of add a little bit to what Derek said. Derek's exactly right. He knows probably more about this than I do. However, if you're considering purchasing some kind of video-on-demand device like an Apple TV or an Amazon Fire Stick or even a Roku device, anything like that, I would double-check because, I mean, if you were to purchase – I have the latest Apple TV as well, but some of the older versions, and I know a lot of the streaming sticks like a Fire Stick or the basic Roku streaming stick, they actually won't provide any of the audio description even for – things that it normally would be available. So with my Roku stick, I don't get video description even for Netflix. I have to go switch to another device, which is newer, and that's fine. However, I would double check if you're looking into some of those devices. Even though they may connect you to Netflix, you want to make sure that it's going to be compatible with the descriptive video.
Oh, okay.
You know what you need to do is you need to buy Apple products.
Yeah, exactly, and that's why I have that now as well.
Another thing I want to point out too is that like movie theaters are more and more moving to having like the audio described feature. And for instance, AMC theaters, there was a class action suit filed against them by the American Council for the Blind, and they recently settled. And so, you know, there's a whole focus now at AMC movie theaters to make sure that if people do want to use audio description there, that they have it, that people are trained, all that stuff. So I think, you know, more and more there are efforts to ensure that people do get a quality audio described experience.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, go ahead, Derek.
Go ahead, Ann. If you go to the movies, when you buy tickets, just tell them, you know, I need audio description. And 9 times out of 10, they're probably going to be like, do you need the glasses or the thing that – and it's like, I say, I need the thing that describes it. And they usually get it right. I go to one called Regal, and Regal has been fantastic. And what I always do, here's a little tip, side tip, take your own set of earbuds because the headphones they provide are usually junk. And so take your own set of earbuds. You can unplug theirs and plug yours in, the 3.5-millimeter regular headphones. And you can put one earbud in, and then that way it doesn't block both of your ears, and it'll help you hear audio a little better. So that's just a little thing that I do, and it's changed the way I watch movies for sure. So, I'm sorry, Andy. Go ahead.
No, all I was going to say is in looking at movie theaters, the only piece of advice I would say is focus on those big box names, your AMCs, your Regals, rather than any kind of boutique theater. I mean, obviously they're going to be less able to provide every kind of service that the big boxes are offering. And best case scenario, you get a headset that doesn't work initially, and then they're able to fix it 5 minutes into the movie, and you also get free movie tickets for your next time, too. So there you go.
That actually happened to me.
Of
me
course.
Too. Like twice.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
No,
I appreciate it.
Because I love the fact that I didn't even know they had that provided.
I mean, yeah, if you go to my can I self plug real quick? A shameless self plug. If you go to my website, I've got a couple of videos and I think a podcast talking about audio description, and so it's such a great feature. Like it just changes the way. I mean, Netflix has they have done such a great job. Netflix with their app on the iPhone and the Apple TV, they're always they'll even say in their notes like improvements to voiceover, and then. I'm watching a couple of Netflix series right now, and there's such good audio description. So definitely check it out. Movies, TV, it's coming along so nicely.
Yeah, that's actually a good thing. I recently started – I used to be an artist before I went blind, and so I tried to paint one day, and my mom goes, you have – like, I'm, like, trying to do things. I thought, painting. Well, I can't draw because I can't see the pencil. So I thought, painting. Well, I can't see the colors, but I tried. And I had paint all over me, and, like, my mom's like, you got paint on these clothes. And I was like, oh, I didn't even know that was there. Like, red, like, and I can't red. And so I've kind of been trying to figure out colors. But, yeah, colors are really hard for me to do.
What was your name again? The one who said you're an artist?
Kathleen.
Kathleen. Kathleen, can I ask you a quick question? This is kind of a side note, but you made mention, maybe I'm reading too much into your words, so forgive me. You said I used to be an artist before this. So why are you not an artist now?
because, well, I can still paint, I can't see, but like, colors are hard. I have recently tried again. I did kind of get defeated for a moment, and then to bring it back up, I did try. Like, I got easels, you know, and I got sketches, like, you know, of people and faces. I can't see that anymore, you know, so I can't technically, like, of course, just drawing something, like, with a pencil, I can't see. I have to draw or write something in a permanent marker. That's I can see it. Black permanent marker, I can see a phone number. But, so I kind of did give up, so I tried. I got an easel and I tried, but I couldn't tell the colors. There's red in that painting, and I was like, but she liked it. And I was like, red? Where's the red? You know, like, I can't see it.
I lost my vision all that before I lost my vision, which, you know, I'm not depressed about it anymore. I just, well, saying I don't, I can't draw with a pencil. Sure. Well, I, the reason I ask is because a lot of times with our terminology we have now declared ourselves something different. So I would say you probably, you are an artist now. I couldn't draw or make a stick man good, but I think your art just has to adapt. And so maybe a couple of things, just as I'm thinking out loud here, forgive me, but if you can't tell colors, what I would do maybe is find a way to prepare for the color. So, for example, get some dishes or some bowls or something that maybe you can draw a big R and a big B and a big G. So you know that that's red, that's blue, that's green. Also, when you go to the easel, you know, you're probably going to paint with bigger strokes and things like that. So I would look at yourself 100% as an artist. Like, you're an artist. Blindness didn't steal art from you. What it did is it changed the way art be put out there to different things. So I don't know. Again, I'm not saying you have to go paint right now, and if you don't, you're a terrible person. I'm just saying that if you're an artist before blindness, you're an artist after blindness. You just now have a different way to approach it. So I just want to encourage you in that, because I hear it in your voice. I think you're an artist, and I think you can find ways to do it. It just means it might be a little different than you did before.
Anyone out there who is finding challenges with still being an artist after having a disability, I don't know if anyone out there has seen the video last night from America's Got Talent, but there was a really I don't use this word lightly. In fact, I normally hate this word, but inspirational video of this deaf girl who is a singer. And she actually takes her shoes off so she can feel the floor, and she's found new ways to be a singer. Spoiler alert, she's phenomenal.
Amazing.
And I really recommend, while you are all checking out Derek's channel on YouTube, Derek, what's your channel called?
You said Life After
Life After Sight Loss. Okay. You can check out that YouTube video as well. America's Got Talent, deaf singer. She's phenomenal. So.
Oh yeah, Andy, I did see that video. I actually just watched it today, and it was incredible.
Cool.
She grab a box of tissues, but enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Hey, okay. I actually saw her in concert live this weekend, and she's insane. It's amazing, incredible. She's just, I mean, like Amy said, inspirational. Take your breath away. Her, like, she's just so down to earth and just, like, I mean, her story and how she talked about and how she wrote that song and how she gave up after she lost her hearing and then she tried to get back. And there's actually a really cool video with ex-ambassadors and her, and it's this crazy cool, and it's just, I mean, just like Derek said, she just does it differently, you know, like with painting. She felt the vocal cords of the singer on ex-ambassadors to know what tune they were at, be able to help, to be able to sing with them. It was pretty weird, but really cool at the same time. And she just adjusted, just like Derek said, with painting. So it's really cool to check her out, yeah.
Very cool.
Maria? Hello?
We lost Maria.
We lost Maria?
Oh, where did Maria go?
Well, I was just going to tell her that I don't mind giving my number out to you folks, you know, open.
Well,
This is Oscar Johnson. What is your name from Georgia?
My name is Randy.
Hey, Randy. My name is, again, Oscar Johnson out of Indianapolis, Indiana. I know you said you don't deal with your computers or you don't your phone or nothing like that, but I have just got out of a program through VA, it's VR, which they showed me how to use my computer, my phone, the technology that you need. You know, they showed me how to get my life back with the cooking and things like that. But I don't know if you have anything in Atlanta you can check in on it to see if they have programs there. I know there was a 6-month program in Chicago that I was checking in on, but check in in Atlanta to see if there are any programs that can help you, because you know, they can help me with my mobility, things that I thought I could never do again. When I used to love carpentry, so they showed me how to use saws again and use my hands again, and even I just got diagnosed in 2015 of August the 19th. I went to work at 6:30, I was sitting in the break room eating my breakfast. At 7:12, I lost my full vision. It just attacked both of my eyes. So, man, you talking about what a ride this been. So this is all new to me, but once I got out of my VR program, which they showed me how to get my life back, I feel like I can do things again. I almost got hit with my mobility trainer. A lot of people don't pay attention to us when we're out there trying to get around, but, I still keep going and stuff like that. I get lost in areas, but I still learned how to use my phone and the computer again. I'm getting that back again. So try to find out if there's programs out there for you.
Yeah, I believe I need
Oscar?
To.
Yes, this is Oscar.
Hey, Oscar, it's Wayne.
Hey, Wayne, all right, how you doing?
All right, buddy.
All right.
Oh.
Yeah, I definitely need to go deeper into the internet and see if I can get some help on it.
Yeah, it's a lot of programs out there for us. So, and plus, even if you don't have the money with these programs, they give you disability that we have, they give you the stuff free. I got a brand new Apple computer, Apple phone, U-Scam, and it's a lot of stuff that you get through these programs. So don't just sit back and not get this opportunity to get this stuff, because it's out there for us. Like I said, I feel like I'm new at this, because it's just been almost a year and a few months. August the 19th, it'll be 2 years. So this is all new to me. So, but once I got into the program, I felt like, man, I have a part of my life back.
Do you know how much blindness, like they told me at Emory, I had 2400 vision, which is way past legally. That's way past legally blind.
Mine is worse.
I think.
Well, see, you can still get in those programs. When you say that, what are you saying? You can't get in the programs, or what? Have you tried anything in Atlanta?
Well, I
know there's things there.
I did get in touch with a place in Suwanee, Georgia, which is about 10 miles toward Atlanta, north or south of here, and they told me that I needed to already have a provider and everything, and I wasn't set up.
Okay. What you
so
do is
have to
do a low vision, find you a low vision doctor, and once you get your low vision doctor, they'll guide you the rest of the way, but you got to find a low vision doctor in Atlanta and let them direct you to the areas that you need to go. They'll get you to the counselors, the people you need to talk to. What I had to do here in Indianapolis, I got in touch with a low vision doctor, and once he diagnosed me and once he found out what I had and what I couldn't see and what I couldn't do, they directed me to these different counselors where I got into these programs where it's free.
Okay. I see what you're saying. I probably should talk to some people at the library or some other advocacy and see if I can.
Well, you know, FDA, the Federation of FVDA, I'm trying to think of the programs that I just can't think of them off my top of my head. But if I get a, if there any way you can get my number, I can try to get some numbers and names for you to help you where you can get all this information, where you can get directed to the places to go, because just going to the library, you know, you got to go downtown or go to the, like I said, to some kind of facility for the blind. That's why I said go to a low vision doctor or eye doctor.
Yeah.
And you can ask them, go to an eye doctor, ask them where is the nearest low vision doctor in your area. And they, once they get you to a low vision doctor, they can get you directed to these other facilities or other things that you need.
Okay.
This is Maria. Hold on. Oscar, thank you so much. That was really, really great, and I loved getting the update on you. I'm so thrilled for you. Randy, you may want to check with Emory. You know, you can contact him again. And I would start there. That's where I would start. That's where Dr. Nancy Newman is.
Yeah.
Nancy Newman, we all know Nancy Newman. She's one of the top LH1 doctors in the world. And I would start there. But I need to kind of wrap this call up. Derek doesn't have that much time. But I want to get a couple things here. As I started to say a bit ago, Derek, thank you so much. And will you please let us know where, again, people can find you and find all your videos and things?
Yes, absolutely. So I have a YouTube channel and a podcast thing. But if you just go to lifeaftersightloss.com, that'll get you all the information. You can sign up for email newsletter. You can watch the videos, podcast. Everything's over there, Life After Sight. And make sure if you're dictating it, be careful. Sometimes it's that S-I-T-E.
Oh.
So it's S-I-T-H-T. But, yeah, everything is there, Life After Sight.
Great. Yeah, lifeaftersightloss.com. Wonderful. And, Derek, thank you again for being our guest tonight. You have a lot of great things to say, and we really appreciate you being on tonight. So, again, thanks very much.
It's been my pleasure. Anybody listening does have any future questions or comments, please contact me. I'd love to hear from you.
Terrific. Wonderful. I want to just talk the next LH1 live call. I believe it's going to be July 5th. That's the first Wednesday in July. Same bat channel, same place, same everything. Of course, we'll be putting out, you know, Facebook reminders and that kind of thing when it gets a little bit closer. We didn't really touch on the conference, but there's been conference information all up and down the Facebook group, and that's coming up at the end of June, 29th and 30th. Looking forward to seeing a lot of the folks that are on this call tonight. But other than that, we are going to wrap it up for the night. If you want to contact my
Randy, while you disappeared for a minute, Randy was ready to give his phone number once you stopped the recording.
I haven't stopped the recording yet.
Okay.
I'm just wrapping up. So if you, I didn't say that. Thanks, Wayne. We can contact myself, Jessica Loomer, or Andy Marks on Facebook. Contact us, private message us, and if you have any ideas or if you'd like to be a guest on LHON Live, please let us know, and we'd be happy to be in touch with you. So now I am going to stop the recording, so that we can open up and exchange phone numbers and, you know, the love and hugs and all that good stuff we want to do. So let me just quickly do that so that your number's not going to be blasted out to the whole world when this is set up in the archives. So let me see here. I'm going to stop recording. Hold on.